Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna. Before we get started, Matt, you made this point before recording. This is not an emergency podcast. This is just like a podcast in mid-January discussing everything that's happened since the end of the Fiesta Bowl, which is a lot. Starting with Matt Salerno going on scholarship.
This podcast
is nothing but a friend of Wapu Nation. But beyond that, we've got Harry Heastand's return, Mike Elston's departure, Chancey Stuckey's hiring, a bunch of early enrollees, Isaiah Foskey, Jason, and Justin Adamilola coming back, Jared Patterson coming back, a lot of players coming back. I don't know where you want to start. We also have a program that doesn't have a defensive coordinator yet. Where do you want to start first? There's just a lot to unpack. You also covered the national championship game, where
Georgia really stuffed that
in your face. If you're an avid Georgia hater on this podcast.
I am not. Let me clarify. Let's start off here. But you forgot Brian Mason also getting hired,
and yes. Jim
Heacock not getting hired, or John Heacock, excuse me, not getting hired. And Brandon Joseph, and of course Blake Group or Groupie. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. The new kicker from Arkansas State. Both also have committed to Notre Dame as transfers. I'm not a Georgia hater. They are the most talented team in the country. The fact that it took them 41 years is what was so frustrating. And now that they finally got that burden off their back, it's going to be them in Alabama and, you know, the same usual suspects every year. But it's just like, it's when a team does something that they haven't done in like 40 something years, like even when Clemson did it, it was like this feel good story and everyone was going crazy. Like it wasn't a feel bad story, but it was kind of like, all right, good for you. You're the trust fund baby. You took 9 years to graduate from college. It was like Northwestern men's basketball making the NCAA tournament for the first time in 100 years. Like it's about time. Like I'm happy for the people, those fans, especially in that state. Between everything, have suffered more than anyone else until the past 4 months with the Braves and the Dogs. But I am happy for them. It was a great game. I mean, the score is not at all reflective of how tight of a game that was. And it just we already knew that those two teams, for the most part, are playing on a different level than everyone else. But to see it up close, to just see how good though they are tackling in space, to see just how hard both sides had to work to just get anything going offensively for the most part. I mean, that Georgia defense, I know we saw it up close in 2017, but this unit was, I think, even better. I mean, they were just so crazy to watch, especially up close.
It did remind me a little bit of that when I think it was the 2-point conversion when Bryce Young tried to run to his right. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh, nope, that's not working. It reminded me of Brandon Wimbush trying to get to the edge on Roquan Smith in 2017. Like that's a different level of talent. The term creatures was thrown around by a former Notre Dame staffer about what Georgia has on defense. I think that's probably a fair way.
What about what they have a quarterback?
That would be more of like stars don't matter, to paraphrase our colleague Ari Wasserman. But I mean, it was a great game. I felt like these title games are often referendums on like, oh, Notre Dame's talent level, this, that, or the other. I'm not sure that I took away anything new from it. And just in terms of like, wow, Notre Dame's got a ways to go to close this gap. I don't think it's a gap that's going to get closed entirely. It's a gap that needs to get narrowed a little bit. But to get there, Marcus Freeman has to fill out a staff and sort of get his first Notre Dame team rolling. He did get good news with Isaiah Foskey's return and Jared Patterson's return. I think that, you know, if we ranked the three most important guys to come back to Notre Dame in 2022, I would have gone Foskey 1. You could make an argument for Austin 2 and Patterson 3, or Patterson 2 and Austin 3. But to get Foskey back to go with Patterson certainly gives whoever the new D-line coach is a very talented group to work with. And we know who the new O-line coach is. Got a very established center to hold everything together.
As far as the gap in you know, the referendum or whatever you want to call it, we spent a lot of time talking about Notre Dame's receivers and really that being the biggest kind of eyesore, if you will, relative to who they should be competing with on a national level. Like Alabama, between those two injuries and the two games against Georgia, John Metchie and Jameson Williams, lost 2,600 yards of production through the air just this season alone. And this was on the heels of last year's team, which had, I think, three first-round picks at the position, including Heisman Trophy winner. And they still were a drive away from tying Georgia and going to overtime in the national championship game. Like Bama ain't going anywhere. This is a little like the 17 team that did beat Georgia, where it was all young guys. Like Bryce Young's only a sophomore. He's coming back. He won the Heisman this year. Brian Robinson Jr. was a great story, but he was a senior running back who couldn't see the field until his senior year because everyone else was a lot better than him. I mean, it was not a vintage Alabama team, and yet through three quarters, they, to me, looked like the better team until Stetson Bennett decided to just go all Joe Burrow on them on the last, two or three drives of the game. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Tell me what is more alarming to you if you're Notre Dame, sort of assessing where you need to go recruiting wise. One, in the recruiting cycle that Alabama signed Najee Harris and Brian Robertson, Notre Dame signed CJ Holmes and Jafar Armstrong. Or two, in the recruiting cycle when Georgia signed Zamir White and James Cook, Notre Dame signed Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister.
Which one's worse? Yeah,
I mean that's the gap that Notre Dame needs to get closer to. I think that, you know, I don't know where Notre Dame recruiting is going to go, how quickly it's going to go. I think it will get a lot better with a head coach who's more dialed into it. But it's kind of one of those things where, like, all right, you're trying to catch programs where the head coach has been maniacally invested in recruiting for years. And if you're Marcus Freeman, you're trying to get caught up there. So it's, I think you watch those games, you think, all right, Notre Dame, I think, can block it. Like, Notre Dame should have an offensive line good enough to sort of hold up. They certainly have tight ends good enough to hold up.
They outran Alabama last year.
Yeah. I think, you know, are they going to have a Georgia defensive line? No, but they should have a very, very good defensive line. You know, it's those skill positions where, you know, we saw Notre Dame lack in the Fiesta Bowl, both at receiver in terms of maybe not quality, but quantity, and at defensive back, where I think they lacked quality and quantity. That's where they have to take this. You know, we can get into all the staff hires, but, you know, it's probably a good segue in the Chancey Stuckey there, because, you know, there was, I was told, and I think we reported that, you know, Notre Dame took a swing at Brian Hartline from Ohio State. They took a swing at Alabama's receivers coach, Jamarcus Shepherd from Purdue, who ultimately took the job at Washington. And then ultimately they chose Chancey Stuckey over Jamarcus Shepherd. And I think if you looked at Stuckey's career resume, it's short, but it's not dissimilar to Brian Hartline's when he was promoted at Ohio State six, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
No, you had a really great story on him up on our site today. I did not know anything about the guy before I heard his name connected to Notre Dame for this position, but reading the story and just, you know, when Tony Elliott, who's got a lot on his plate, picks up the phone for you immediately to sing this guy's praises. When Dabo Swinney is singing this guy's praises, I mean, I think those are really strong endorsements. And like, I think the resume, not to dismiss it, but it's hard to compare a resume to resume when a guy played in the NFL. Like, it's just different. There's a credibility there. There's a juice there. There's a, you know, he walks in that room for the first time and everyone in that room will have either Googled or YouTubed his highlights, or at least know he's gotten to where they all want to be. Mm-hmm. And they don't care really what he's done since then. They know that he was qualified enough to become the wide receivers coach at Notre Dame. And I think that's very impressive, aside from the fact that he might drink more coffee than me and you both, as you got to as well.
High respect level for the coffee intake of Chancey Stuckey. I think one thing
to show him around town.
That it didn't make that into the story, I wish that it did, was about when I talked to Tommy Bowden about it. He mentioned how one of Stuckey's assets is, like, he already had his sort of dream sidetracked in college when he showed up at Clemson and was, I'm going to play quarterback. Like, he had to get over himself quickly at Clemson and be like, all right, I can't play the position that I want, but there's a position where this team needs me and I can contribute. And then he moved to receiver and his career took off. I think that's a story that I think will play well at Notre Dame. I mean, you think about guys like Joe Wilkins or Avery Davis, where, you know, things maybe didn't go as well as they wanted, or Xavier Watts in reverse. I think to have somebody who can relate to you on that level about like, all right, I had to change positions, but then I made the NFL at the back end of it. That all is that I think plays well. You know, Bowden talked about how Stuckey was, you know, he played a high maintenance position and deals with high maintenance players like receivers and DBs. I think he said, like, you know, these are Mercedes and Lexus kids. They're not GM kids. Like there is some nonsense that goes with those positions, and Stuckey has navigated that. He's been that. You know, he's developed through that and grown through that. So I think all that helps a lot. And, you know, ultimately it's, you know, you're in a spot if you're Notre Dame, you're like, who impressed you the most in the interviews between Shepherd and Stuckey? It was Stuckey. And that's ultimately why he got the job.
Yeah. And Elliot's quotes, I think, illustrate that too. And I know Elliot a little bit just from being around Clemson a lot. Like, the guy's no BS. Like, he's not going to praise a guy just for the sake of praising a guy. He's not going to hire a guy for, you know, just because he likes him personally. I mean, you know, that guy passed up a lot of head coaching jobs in recent years to stay with Clemson through their playoff runs, and has been around, has worked for really good coaches and has hired really good coaches. And again, I think, you know, I think Jack Swarbrick said this to you on the day he hired Marcus Freeman. Dabo Swinney kind of became this like eye-opening figure for him in his search for an ex-head coach, as far as not necessarily being a player's coach, but just being more involved with recruiting, being more adaptable, being, you know, available. And when you see whom Chance Stuckey has worked for and where he's been professionally, I'm sure there are even some good story. You know, you had a line in there about how he made a foray into Hollywood. Like, there's probably some stories and lessons he will take from that he brings into his receivers room. So I'm curious to see what changes. You know, unfortunately, it's a low bar to clear, at least in the recruiting department. I do think Dale Alexander actually did pretty good job of developing those guys. He just,
I agree,
did not recruit them and get nearly enough of them, and which has put them in a really tough situation right now. I mean, your roster breakdown for 2022, you essentially said, like, if not for the COVID bonus year, like, what are we even looking at here
on roster? And it's, I mean, that really is Davis, because, like, technically Wilkins and Lindsay could have come back anyway, you know, without the COVID year, but, like, that's not, like, you don't hear a lot of good receiver depth charts that are stocked with graduate students. Like, that's not, you know, it's a position where if you're good enough to play, you play right away. Like, you look more like Lorenzo Styles did. You know, that's where Notre Dame needs to go. You look more like Michael Floyd did, or you're impacting the depth chart a little bit like, you know, Corey Robinson or Will Fuller did. That's what Notre Dame needs. Like, the fact that you're relying on guys who have been around the program for 5 years now is not, you're not suddenly going to jump 43 inches. You know, because if you're good enough to go pro, you go pro before your fifth year. You often go pro after your third year, but that's just not where Notre Dame's depth chart is at wideout. So they're fortunate that they could get Wilkins back, Davis back, Lindsey back, because it's a depth chart with no fourth year seniors and no third year juniors on it, which is really hard to get your head around. Cause that is
one incoming freshman on top.
Yeah. And like, one incoming it was not recruited well or managed well by Dell Alexander. Ultimately, that's why Notre Dame needed to make a move. A position that was managed well in recruiting, but maybe not developed as well as it should be, offensive line. You had the Harry Hiestan return with Chris Watt. That is, and I talked to Mike McGlinchey about it today for a story. I think whenever they announce it, I'll have that story ready to go. But
I don't know if that's out there yet. I mean, Watt's expected to come back in a similar role to what he did 2 years ago. But I don't know if he has any GA eligibility left.
Yeah, I think more of an analyst type of thing. But like the Hiestan return, I was a little like, one, he's a great, great offensive line coach. I was interested if there would be any sort of like, you know, you can't go home again dynamics there. like the first time that he was here was pretty magical. The 2012
still is his home. He still lives there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. You know, 2012, 2015, 2017, those were fun ass kicking offensive lines to cover. How that all meshes with Marcus Freeman, we'll see. With Tommy Rees, I don't think there's any doubt that that will play very well with Rees. But McGlinchey said, like, his like former offensive linemen from Zach Martin on down are already figuring out when they're all coming back to campus to work with the players, to hang out with them. And it just is like the way McGlinchey talked about it is just like, this is like the pride of Notre Dame has been restored by Harry Hiestand here. You know, and it's like I asked, like, I'm not asking you to dunk on Jeff Quinn here, but like, what did you see when you watched the offensive line? He's just like, you know, the fact that not everybody saw the game the same way, you know, not everyone worked together and, you know, had this sort of same mission and went about it with the same mannerisms, like, that really stuck out to McGlinchey. And he's like, that's all over now. Like, now it's sort of back to the Harry Hiestand way. Otherwise you're not going to play. And, you know, I sort of asked like, what was sort of like the fundamental drill or the technique drill that stuck with you most from Hiestand's time? He's like, every single thing sticks with me. And I don't know if you saw, there's a Green Bay Packers receiver, there's a video on Twitter that sort of made the rounds. I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden here, but like played at Louisville, I think. And he was asked about like how he practices. And he's like, you know, you see a lot of these receiver drills where players will just sort of like, they'll do these fancy footwork drills that don't actually apply to the game, but they look good while you're doing them. And he's like, Hiestand is the exact opposite of that. Like everything you do in practice applies to the game, and it may be very repetitive and it will beat you over the head, but that's the way Hiestand coaches. And that I can't help but think that Notre Dame's offensive line will take a big step forward next year with him.
Yeah. Another one where I think the bar is unfortunately pretty low, although the talent is there to be molded, for lack of a better term. I mean, two true freshmen start in the bowl game and go the length of the game and hold up pretty darn well against a really good defense. And now they're getting tutoring from, you know, the Godfather. I mean, arguably the best offensive line coach in the nation. I mean, there are a lot of big time programs that inquired about Harry Houston's availability in recent years when he was sitting out. And he told them all, like, I have no interest. And Notre Dame, through a combination of, you know, his experience there, still living in town, I think familiarity with the caliber of players that go there and what's needed to succeed there, at least up front. That was the one that ultimately brought him back in. And, you know, I know that staff is really excited. I'm sure the offensive linemen are really excited until they get on the field with him and then are
slightly terrified,
but then they're going to get paid in 3 years and say, thank you. Paid a lot. As you've seen the Zach Martins and Ronnie Stanley's of the world, get extensions at the NFL level. But I mean, that was the biggest one. I think, you know, DC is really big too. I'm not going to minimize that, but I think it's a little less big when the head coach is a former DC. The offensive line's one, at least in Notre Dame, you've got to get right. And I think there's little doubt that Notre Dame got it right here.
Well, I mean, you do have to get both right, especially after watching the Fiesta Bowl, which is probably another good segue into Mike Elston's departure to Michigan, which is pretty shocking to me. I don't know if it should be, but it is. Based
Michigan
on
or him leaving?
Him leaving. Michigan less. Well, I mean, Michigan is shocking in its own way because, like, the head coach there is, like, is Jim Harbaugh going to be there? I don't know. Right. Or Bruce Feldman has reported that that's possibly no. That's a weird time to jump into that. But, I mean, his commentary on National Signing Day about, you know, his family and staying in South Bend and, you know, how much they love being here and his daughters wanting to go to Notre Dame. Like, it's like, okay, you know, I felt like it was, I'm at a point in my career. Well, yeah, yes, I want to be a DC. I know it's probably not going to happen here, but for the work-life balance, the players that he gets to coach, players he gets to recruit here, all of that would be enough to be like, all right, I'll stay here. And this might not be my ideal work situation, but it's a good place to be. And I think for him, I don't know how much the Fiesta Bowl had to do with it. I'm assuming quite a bit. You know, if Notre Dame plays lights out defense in the Fiesta Bowl, does the world look a little different to Mike Elston? I think probably.
Does it? I mean, if they play lights out, everyone says, good job, we're hiring a new DC.
Yeah, maybe not.
I don't know.
But it just, I think the way that game went, it was pretty easy to tag him as the reason that it didn't go very well, which I don't think is entirely fair. But I think after that game, he just sort of walked off the field and it's like, all right, you know, I'm ready for a new challenge and I'm not getting it here. And I can appreciate that. It's like 12 years is a absolute lifetime in college football coaching. So that was a luxury that, Notre Dame is not going to get with many assistant coaches. I think if you took Elston out of the equation, the average lifespan of a Notre Dame assistant coach here is probably 2.75 seasons. It's not a lot. So that ultimately, I think Notre Dame got a lot out of Mike Elston. And even though it's never easy to depart. It's a hard way to do that. That would be one departure where I think Notre Dame would be like, all right, thank you. Like, nice work. You took a position group that was, I mean, the narrative about Notre Dame's defensive line when he came here was, why can't you recruit defensive linemen? Is your defensive line ever going to be good?
Well, that was every position when he came.
Yeah, but not quarterback. True. And not receiver, but like at defensive line, it was just like Notre Dame was a million miles off where it needed to be at defensive line. And I'm not saying that overnight that changed and it got exactly where it needed to be. There were some ups and downs along the way, but since 2018, maybe 2017, but certainly since 2018, they've been in a healthy spot. There have been seasons where the defensive line has been stronger than the offensive line.
Which, 2012, they might have been the best in the country. If you look back at that roster,
you would never ever have predicted that in 2010 when they arrived, that Notre Dame's defensive line could be better than its offensive line. But there have been seasons where that's been the case, and Mike Elston deserves a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, I was surprised because I think he tweeted, some version of "I'm coming back."
Mm-hmm.
That week when everyone was either coming or going, when Brian Kelly left. And I was really surprised to see that. Now, Mike did fly down to Baton Rouge. He met with Brian Kelly. Like, he had a job waiting for him at LSU that he ultimately decided against taking, and he came back to Notre Dame, which, I think family was the primary reason over that, to not leave South Bend. But I was still surprised just because, he was attached to the hip with Brian Kelly for the last 18 years at three different stops. And, as good of a coach as we think he was, he never moved beyond a position coach in 18 years with a good body, his biggest believer, as his boss. And I just didn't see a path to that happening at Notre Dame with Brian Kelly no longer there, which made me surprised that he came back. But he came back, he spoke glowingly of the place on signing day. Marcus Freeman thought enough of him to entrust him with play calling duties for the Fiesta Bowl. And again, I think if that game went really well, I don't think, like, from my understanding, they're always going to go outside for a defense coordinator. If that game went really well, I don't think that would have changed things, which would probably make Mike Elston even more upset. And, just trying to use logic here of like, why didn't I enter shot? So I don't know. I mean, the timing's weird. The place isn't, it's his alma mater. It's close. The family thing I think is minimized. You're not going to Baton Rouge, you're going a couple hours down the road to Ann Arbor, mm-hmm. in a similar environment. But I was surprised he came back to begin with, just because of the dynamics of everything that had happened. But it's hard to say that either side didn't get a whole lot out of this deal over the last 12 years.
No doubt about it. Well, I think that's the surprise. It's like, if you had said Mike Elston was going to not be on staff next year when Marcus Freeman was promoted head coach, I'd be like, yeah, I could totally see that. But then when he tweets out that, I'm coming back with the photo of the defense lineman and signing day press conference, they're like, oh, all right. This is sort of running counter to what college coaches often do, where, you know, you're sort of looking for the job first and you figure out everything else later. So that to me is still a little bit of a surprise. And also it's just like, okay, you can go to Michigan where Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo are out the door. Your head coach is a little bit a quirky dude, to put it mildly. Or you can stay at Notre Dame where you have Foskey, Adam Alola, a really good recruiting class put together. Like, I feel like Notre Dame is a better job from a position coach, but if you're going to go to Michigan and there's some promise about you being a DC in the not too distant future there, then I completely get it. Cause that's sort of itching scratching a professional itch is what I'm trying to say. That Elston's had for quite a while. And I get that. I totally respect that.
If you kill to Michigan over the next year, two or three, and you've proven yourself to be one of the top D-line coaches in the country at the two biggest brands with probably the two biggest networks in all of college football, that also boosts your candidacy to be a DC somewhere.
He's like the next generation of Greg Madison. Michigan and Notre Dame, that means Elston will ultimately coach at Ohio State.
Glad you didn't say Ed Warner on the
offensive line. No.
The timing was surprising, but I mean, last year when they hired Marcus, I was hearing people in the Goog saying, well, I guess that means Elson's gone. He didn't get it. And that was, let's see, Freeman, Lee, Elko, Ben Gorder. That's four full-time DCs.
You're not counting Greg Hudson in there?
No, because Mike Elson was actually the real DC.
Yeah, exactly.
When Greg Hudson was there. That's four full-time DCs, three coming from outside the building that Brian Kelly hired over Mike Elson. And look,
we're all good hires.
They're all good hires, but like, we're all human.
I'd be a little peeved too.
If Adam Hansman decides to hire someone else to do the Shamrock tomorrow and says you two are staying on in a different role, we'd probably have a little FU build up in us. Like,
yeah,
it's everywhere. So I just,
you're now doing a Mac-focused podcast. Yeah, no, I mean, I get all of that.
By the way, it wasn't for lack of effort. Brian Kelly tried to a couple times. I will say that.
Right. I just sort of view it as, I was talking to our colleague Bruce Feldman about this yesterday. It's like college coaches, it's a weird industry that I think you have a very bizarre perspective on the professional world because it's just a very bizarre profession. Like, if you said, hey, Matt, in this scenario where we're no longer doing the Shamrock, we're doing a Mac conference football podcast, but you're making $600,000, you'd be like, all right, you know, maybe
I'm already making that, Pete, with the,
yeah, maybe you are. I don't know the terms of your contract. But you'd be like, you know what? That's maybe not 100% what I want to do, but I'm well compensated. I have a young kid. I have a mortgage to pay in Chicago. Like, this is not the worst thing in the world. That part of college coaching to me is a little bit odd just because I think that you get in these jobs where you're well paid. You like the people you work with. Like, you like the players you're coaching. You like the institution where you're employed. That doesn't always carry the day. You know, and look, it didn't carry the day with Brian Kelly, I think, for the most part either. I think that he liked a lot of things about Notre Dame, but ultimately took the job at LSU. So it just is, the timing of it is not great, but then it never is. But I sort of keep coming back to, the guy was here for 12 years. You just say, thank you. Appreciate your work. Good luck to you at Michigan. I think that's probably the proper response on that one. And probably easier to give that response, even though he's going to Michigan, than it will ever be to give that response to Brian Kelly for what he did over his 12 seasons here and breaking Newt Rockne's record.
Mike will hit up Notre Dame to scout Ohio State after week one, since Mike's got him in week 12 next year.
Yes. Yeah. That'd probably be some good, I don't know how much intel will be passed back and forth there, but certainly that call will be made. I don't know. Was there anything interesting about, I guess, Notre Dame's roster comings and goings that sort of struck you And I, this is probably a good time, Brandon Joseph, the transfer from Northwestern. You're way more plugged in with Northwestern than I am. What was sort of the vibe around there about his skill set and his decision to leave?
Yeah, the decision to leave, I've heard this from a couple guys, was a lot of these academic-minded programs that aren't having the success on the field are getting raked over the coals in the portal. And after a 3-9 season, Northwestern kind of looks like Exhibit A for that right now. I mean, this guy was an All-American as a freshman. I mean, he was phenomenal during the 2020 season for these guys, and was good last year too. I mean, he is an instant game changer for that Notre Dame secondary, not in the way of Kyle Hamilton, but like when you're losing Kyle Hamilton and you saw that unit without Kyle Hamilton against Oklahoma State, obviously you need an experienced superstar back there. And that's exactly what Brandon Joseph is. I mean, he's a really, really good player. I think he was number 2 on our portal rankings of available players. And Notre Dame went and got him. And, you know, hopefully for their sake, they'll be making 1 or 2 receiver additions in that realm as well. Probably won't be as good relative to the rest of the receivers as Brandon Joseph is to the rest of the safeties. But he's a really, really good player, and that's a home run get for Notre Dame.
I think it's significant but not game-changing that he's an undergraduate transfer. There are not rules at Notre Dame that prevent that from happening. No. It's just complicated. And the fact that I think Notre Dame can go to Stanford, it can go to Northwestern, it can go to Vanderbilt, Duke, Wake Forest, and find undergraduate transfers that make it, that sort of hit their criteria. Like Austin Jones is a former 4-star running back at Stanford that entered the portal this week. Like that's a guy Notre Dame could kick the tires on if it wanted to. I don't know if they do. I don't think that they do. But there's nothing that can stop Notre Dame from doing that. And I think you get a guy that fills a really serious need position, as we saw in the Fiesta Bowl. They don't have enough safety talent that can cover. I mean, we've all seen the pick of Justin Fields guarding one on the end zone against Gilbert, I think. I'm blanking on the Ohio State receiver.
I remember the play. I just can't remember the player.
I mean, it's just like Notre Dame doesn't have a safety who can make that kind of play. They had one, but you know, when he hurt his knee against USC, that was sort of it. It's hard to find safeties with sort of man coverage skills, but Brandon Joseph has it, and that it's kind of a walk-in day one starter for that group, even at a position where they have 4 guys who have started or played significant minutes.
I want to go back to the staff thing real quick, because we still don't know who the DC is going to be. And I only know one name who's still like not available, but who they're interested in, who it could be. And I don't know if you have any more to add to that, but John Heacock from Iowa State was a guy who was involved, who interviewed with Notre Dame, from everything I heard, impressed them, but ultimately staying at Iowa State. I know Derek Mason is on the radar, former Vanderbilt head coach. Was the DC at Auburn this year. Was the DC at Stanford during some of the glory years of Stanford before he ended up moving on to become a head coach at Vanderbilt. What do you think they do there? And does this change a little bit with another position open on that side of the ball as far as a package deal or given maybe a little more free rein to whoever they do hire to come in?
I think that it would change it if it was Haycock, because you'd be like, all right, you can bring your defensive line coach from Iowa State with you, who is not like a huge name, but has been there for a very long time. I wouldn't say that his track record of development is like off the charts. But if you're going with somebody more like Derek Mason, then I think you sort of have your pick of defensive line coaches, whether that, you know, could you go to Tyler Stockton, and say, hey, you can be co-DC here and coach the defensive line. Yeah, I think you could do that. I think Stockton would be more than willing to listen. Do you go with Larry Black, who was a GA here, went to Toledo? As you remember, Toledo basically bottled up Notre Dame's offense, and I think they had 8 tackles for loss in the game against Notre Dame this year, but was recently hired by Clark Lee at Vanderbilt just in the last month. Would not be a shock. You know, coaches don't leave jobs after 1 month regularly, but it does happen.
Autry Denson.
This would be one of those times where maybe that would make sense. I would like to think that Notre Dame will have sort of its pick of defensive line coaches that they don't, that you don't end up hiring. Like, I think Stuckey as receivers coach makes a lot of sense on a staff with Hiestand and John McNulty. You know, Reese is younger, but been in football forever. I think on the defensive side of the ball, a little bit more experience would play well. The recruiting chops are still essential. Like Chris Rumpf was, I think it was with the Bears, but as experienced at Clemson and Alabama, and I think Texas, you know, somebody like that would be like, okay, that is a guy that's going to get in some recruiting brawls for you if he's Notre Dame's defensive line coach. Like that, those kinds of chops would be welcome. And I think a little bit of experience as well. Like I think that experience would, to me, would be a little bit more critical on the defensive line at this stage with the way the defensive staff is put together than it was with Stuckey at the receiver position, the way the offensive staff is put together.
That makes sense. I just, I mean, obviously there are names out there and Notre Dame should have their pick of top tier candidates, but it's hard for me to not get behind the idea of Tyler Stockton if both sides are interested.
Oh God, in him coming I would back. Love it.
And I don't even know if he's at Ball State, which like he's doing a great job there. He's a young DC there. He's very up and coming. I don't know if you need to entice him with a BS co DC title to get him to come back to his alma mater, because he's going to be making a lot more money as a position coach at Notre Dame than he's making as a DC at Ball State. But he's done really, really good there. I mean, they won the MAC a year ago. I don't think he's 30 yet, which I guess he'd fit right in on the staff, but
right.
Another guy who's been coaching most of his career. I mean, he was coach. I saw him at a camp years ago. He ran into him. I barely recognize him because he lost 100 pounds since he was playing, but he was there for Western Illinois, I think. Like he's been a little bit everywhere. So
he was at Connecticut for a minute, I think, as a GA under Bob Diaco.
Sounds about right. Yep. And he's like, he didn't have the greatest playing career. Like he barely got on the field at Notre Dame, but like a lot of times those are the guys who end up being the best coaches. Like,
right.
They learn football another way and they learn to love it another way, despite not getting the glory that everyone, you know, the starters or whoever gets. So that would be a guy I definitely would keep an eye out for, but I'll be curious what they do decide to do at that position and at DC, because, you know, I don't know. Like Derek Mason was never presented to me as this like home run can't miss guy we're targeting. But I do know with Heacock out of the picture, he was the one named candidate I had been given from multiple people there. I imagine there are others, and there may even be others who get into the mix now that it's still a little more open than we thought it would be at the start of this day.
Yeah. Is this a moment where you take a huge swing if you're Marcus Freeman and like try to get like a Jim Leonard type? I don't think he would leave.
He turned on the Packers.
Yeah. I also don't think there are a whole lot of like big swing type DCs even available. Like
here's one. I don't know if he's available, but I you know, last year Aaron Suttles came on our podcast and said he'd be surprised if Pete Golding was still at Alabama after 2020, and he is here in 2022 now, but you know, could you get him?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That would be an interesting one. I feel like Mason would be a really strong hire. The experience is there, both at a multiple high academic schools. You know, he's only been at Auburn for a year, but it was in the SEC for what, 8 years, 7 at Vanderbilt, 1 at Auburn, if I'm not mistaken. Like, sort of understands what the snake pit is like. Also understands how to manage like the high academic types with the Stanford Vanderbilt combo. So linebacker base, which is what Notre Dame needs, and has a lot of experience running defenses, which again, that was what I think Notre Dame sort of got exposed a little bit in the Fiesta Bowl, where not having somebody who can like turn the tide of a game while it's happening, that was a skill set that they lacked. So I would think that would be something that Derek Mason would bring to the table. Also, I mean, what did he hold Alabama to, like 10 points or something last season? Like, that's pretty good.
You're bearing the lead here. He once challenged Brian Kelly to a fight, which these days in South Bend makes you a conquering hero.
At the time, it was like, oh, kind of poor form, Derek Mason. Now it's like, oh, Derek Mason. I mean, it's like maybe he was ahead of his time.
Derek Mason almost won at Notre. He almost won at Notre Dame.
Yes. Coach.
In yeah, the year Notre Dame went undefeated.
Oh, my goodness.
Tyler Stockton almost won a week earlier or a week later that same year.
Was Stockton on that staff already at that time?
I think so. I think.
It's kind of getting the weird 2019 band back together. Or was it 2018.
2018.
Yeah, it was 2018 because those were the games that ultimately made Ian Book the starting quarterback and turned him in, put him on the track record to be the all-time winningest quarterback in history.
I just looked it up. Stockton got to Ball State a year later. I apologize.
Okay.
Would have been fun, though. You know what would really be fun? Ed Ogeron's open for business, and he's got expertise on the D-line. There's a trade.
Can you imagine? Like,
that's a great trade if you get him as, like, not a head coach.
We're like,
we'll give you Brian Kelly. We'll take
Ed Ogeron for Brian Kelly.
And now him and Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman could be his boss a year after Ed was almost Marcus's boss.
Oh, my God. I mean, he did like Ed Ogeron. He did connect well with Marcus Freeman's family as well when he went down for the interview there. Like, I was told, like, oh, they love Coach O. Like, really nice guy. Big personality. Like, obviously a great defensive line coach, loves to recruit. Not sure how well that would play at Notre Dame, but, like, who thought a Irish Catholic from Boston would play well in Baton Rouge? I mean, it's...
Is it playing well?
We're all open to new ideas at this point, Matt. And Ed Ogeron would be a hell of a new idea for Notre Dame.
By the way, I will say one thing in Brian Kelly's defense. I thought it was hilarious when he went on the ESPN broadcast of, what was it, the Texas Bowl, whatever else he was playing in against Kansas State. And he leans into the joke and says, I'm from Boston. I don't have an accent. I don't know what an accent is or whatever he said. And he's getting roasted on that because it's a cool thing to do now, make fun of Brian Kelly, which I get if you're a Notre Dame fan, but it was a lot more than Notre Dame fans roasting him. Look, the guy doesn't have, like, the best delivery or dad humor, as we've seen, from the execution joke to the family bit. I thought that was actually pretty funny and, like, in on the joke. Maybe if people watch the clip, they'd feel that way. When you read it in print, it looks kind of stupid, but I don't know. I'll give him a pass here. I thought that was pretty funny.
He does. I think this is sort of one of his underrated skills. He may not come off well in the moment, but, like, 48 hours later, or in this case, 2 weeks later, like, he can make fun of himself. And it's actually kind of endearing when he does. That's not a skill all multimillionaire head coaches have. But, I mean, you saw, like, I would joke with some of our other beat people here, like, the three stages of Brian Kelly. Like, there's the post game Brian Kelly, where he's like a raving lunatic and ready to bite your head off. And then there's the day after press conference on Sunday Brian Kelly, where it's just, like, really terse and kind of jerky. And then by the time you got to him Tuesday, he's just, like, jokey, having a good time with, like, wasn't that a crazy thing that happened over the weekend? Like, he gets over stuff quickly and is able to sort of make fun of himself. And that's not something every head coach can do.
No, we'll see how that plays down there. If he doesn't get off to a hot start, and he's got a lot of work to do. He will.
He's not going to get off to a hot start.
He's not going to get off to a hot start there, but, like, the guy knows how to win football games, especially football games you're supposed to win. And at LSU, outside of Alabama every year, like, you're supposed to win a lot of them. I think he'll do fine. Don't know if he'll ever beat Alabama and win a national championship, and they fire coaches who do win national championships down there, but
multiple.
I think he'll figure some of it out.
I think he will too. It's there's almost, like, too much narrative. Like, I have a hard time just keeping up with Notre Dame. Now I have to keep up with LSU and also my, like, side chick Vanderbilt. Like, there's just a lot. There's a lot of college football to watch moving forward. Like, I'm sorry, Chuck Martin of Miami, Ohio. I just don't have time for Max.
What about anymore. Michigan now with Michael?
It's just a lot to take in.
Vanderbilt, that's the first time in the history of the English language, I think, Vanderbilt's been referred to as anyone's side chick in any context whatsoever. Yes.
My editor, Eric Single, will appreciate that. Like,
that's right.
I would joke with him last season, like, Vanderbilt was really hard to watch. because I never had the station that they were on. Like, literally, they were hard to find to watch on television. They were on CBS.
You know what? Sports so was Notre Dame for one game last year.
Yeah, that's true. But there's just going to be an overwhelming amount of football narrative for Notre Dame fans to follow and Notre Dame beat people to follow, because there's just the Michigan thing is just like all on top of it. Can you imagine if Jim Harbaugh leaves and then like what happens with Mike Elston? That is, he's the defensive coordinator there, or is he Michigan head coach Mike Elston? Like, let's get crazy here, Matt.
I don't know. Does Bill O'Brien or whoever their next head coach is, Luke Fickell, Matt Campbell, do they want to keep him? I don't know. There's a lot to follow. Imagine if they were still playing each other. Narrative God. With that. That would be fun.
Yeah, I don't want to say, like, I never like to rush through the off season because I need it to recover. However, with Notre Dame opening at Ohio State and the LSU stuff happening, it's going to be an awesome, awesome college football season in 2022 for reasons beyond Notre Dame playing Ohio State and playing in Las Vegas and ending up in LA against Lincoln Riley and USC and probably Caleb Williams at the very end. Like, it's going to be a banger of a football season for people with either direct interest in Notre Dame or sort of like tangential interest in Notre Dame, which gets you to LSU, which gets you to Vanderbilt, which gets you to a handful of other places.
I'll one up that and say, because of the coaching change, at least for Notre Dame's sake, this offseason is going to be exciting and crazy because there's so many stories.
Going to be. It already is.
It's January 13th. We got a long way to go between now and Columbus.
Already exhausted.
And there are a lot of people to write about and cover. I mean, you see everyone in Indianapolis for a big game like this. Like, Father John was there, Jack was there, they're there for playoff meetings. But I'm sitting down eating in the press box pregame, and Doug Le Maurice from Cleveland.com, longtime Ohio State beat writers there, sits down next to me and we're talking. And I'm like, oh yeah, like Notre Dame, Ohio State next year. And like, oh yeah, you've covered Ohio State for like ever. What's Marcus? You covered Marcus Freeman, right? And he's like, I wrote a story on him in college about his goal of being athletic director one day. And I'm like, well, I don't know if he made the right or wrong choice, but he made something pretty impressive that was an athletic director at the age of 35. Shout out to whoever baked him the Vans cake, by the way, on his birthday. That was really cool.
Oh, I heard through my baking sources that equipment manager Chris Bassick was in charge of procuring the cake. I'm not saying that he baked it. I don't think that he did, but
Bob Diaco. Sorry, you said baked a cake, and I mean Bob Diaco.
Marcus Freeman tasted the cake. Like, is there chili powder in here? Like, this is a very confusing cake recipe. But equipment manager Chris Bassick was the one that brought that into the office. It was very well done, kind of on point with Notre Dame's now 36-year-old head coach.
Oh, 36. I remember that because my birthday was the same week. And I think I just remember looking that up because he got hired right around his birthday last year. And I was like looking up and we were doing an actual emergency pod during that. So I wanted to get that right. One more, and this is like really going down the weeds, but Mike Elston was teammates, and I think he might have even been college roommates at Michigan with Scott Loeffler, who's the head coach at Bowling Green, job that Loeffler got and Elston, I believe, interviewed for a couple of years ago.
Yes, a job that Loeffler got and then hired Brian Van Gorder as his defensive coordinator.
Hired him as his D-line coach. The DC resigned. Or he hired him as – he didn't hire him as his DC.
Oh, right. Was it,
hired him as something else.
Pelini was involved in there? I can't remember.
I think you're right. Yeah, of course.
Pelini or Petrino.
Like, it's got to be one or the other, right?
There's never
a and, this thing. 2023, Michigan plays Bowling Green. Don't know if our friend Scott Loeffler will still be there by then. But
no, Mike Elston may be the new Bowling Green head coach at that point.
Wow.
Or the Michigan head coach. Who knows? It's college football. I wouldn't rule anything out. It's 2022. I don't know if... before we wrap up, like the last cup from the Fiesta Bowl with our last podcast to today, I mean, has sort of your opinion of the trajectory of Notre Dame football under Freeman changed at all in the last 2 weeks?
Not necessarily, because there's still a lot of dominoes to fall.
Mm-hmm.
I was excited about the hire. I'm still excited about the hire. The game, the Fiesta Bowl, I think was a needed kind of sobriety test for everybody as far as like, okay, like just because Brian Kelly's gone doesn't mean you're going to go 12-0 every year and now recruit better and beat Alabama. And I, you know, seeing the national championship game up close was a nice reminder of like what a different sport the SEC is playing from everyone else. But I wouldn't say too much has changed. No, like I was excited before. I'm still excited. I want to see what they do with DC and D-line coach. I want to see what they do with the portal. So far, so good in that department with Brandon Joseph, but you got to find a way to get more bodies in that receiver room. And I don't know how you do that because I don't know if there are any top-tier receivers in the portal. I'm sure there are, but, like, I don't know if there's a Brandon Joseph in there right now who has Notre Dame written all over him the minute he puts his name in there. So I'm curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah, I am too. They need a Brandon Joseph at receiver. And, you know, I heard rumblings that they were a potential destination for, a receiver who's not in the portal at all. And I'm not sure he will be, but, you know, that they were sort of working on higher level prospects or wanted to be. And it would be, you know, they were open to undergrads in the same way they're open to Joseph as an undergrad. So that they need to figure out something. They need to find a Kevin Austin. Maybe that's a jumbo receiver like a Trigg from USC who plays tight end a little bit. I don't know, but they have to do something there because I think just sort of rolling forward with what they have is really shouldn't be an option because we know that they just need more bodies and they need more talent in that room to hack it.
Also saw our friend of the pod, Greg McElroy, there as well.
Oh,
eagerly waiting his Shamrock bomb to like Alabama OC or something when Bill O'Brien leaves. The other one, we got to address this just because we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't. And I aggregated all this so you dear listeners don't have to. The way too early top 25s. Notre Dame's place in Stuart Mandel's 5th, Pat Forty's 9th, Joel Klatt's 9th, Brett McMurphy's 12th. Mark Schlabaugh's 6th.
I tried to talk Stu into like 7th or 8th because Notre Dame as a top 5 team was like, not sure if I would go that far, but Notre Dame as a top 10 team, I absolutely would. Like it's a really talented group, but you know, we've talked about this over the years on this podcast. Like once you get past 3 or 4, like, who's 5th is sort of the difference between 5th and 9th is all not
as
all
we saw significant. Like, yeah, we can.
And it's like, look, you've got when Notre Dame is really good, when they have a chance to make the playoff, they sort of quote unquote win with draft declarations or returnees. This was a very winning off season in that way with Foskey and Patterson, even though you lost Austin, you add Brandon Joseph. If you can add a top flight receiver, then that offsets Austin. But, you know, I think, you know, whether Notre Dame is 5th or 9th or 12th, I do look at Notre Dame next year and feel like that's a team that's good enough to make the playoff or contend to make the playoff.
They play this year's schedule.
If they played this year's schedule, for sure. That's the tricky part. Or it's either a curse or a gift. I'm not sure. Because you get a chance to, like, go on the road and get marquee wins in a way that they didn't this year. They just never had that opportunity. Also, that means you have to go to Ohio State and play a game, which is obviously very complicated. So I don't know. I look at Notre Dame should contend for the playoff next year, even if they're 0-1 and lost by 14 points. Like,
you're the only team to beat Clemson, which who knows how they'll be, but like
I would think, yeah,
it's like a signature win you don't get most years.
If you left Columbus at 0-1, I still think it's reasonable to expect you're going to be 7-1 when Clemson comes. I don't have Notre Dame's schedule committed to memory yet.
Yeah, I mean, BYU should be good. USC's at the end of the year will be better.
Right. I think if you have one loss when Clemson visits, like, I think you would feel pretty good about that if you're Notre Dame. Then you take your chances with that. And if you get that, then you kind of roll forward from there and see what happens. You know, you got BC with Dracovic on senior day, and then you go to, we'll see what USC looks like. But if it's Caleb Williams, USC, like, that's going to be a hell of a challenge too. But again, it's like, it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because, like, it's a marquee win on the road. It's a curse because you have to get it. But I would think that if Notre Dame, if you said, hey, Notre Dame, you've got one loss when Clemson visits, you'd be like, all right, we'll do that. Then you sort of take your chances in November at that point.
It's January 13th. What's the over-under on how long we have to wait for a line for this Ohio State game? What do you think that line will be?
Ooh. I don't know. Like, what do you think? Like 8.5? I'm not good at this stuff.
Oh, for points?
Yeah.
I feel like most of these usually come out in like May.
Okay.
I feel like now that like more and more states are like legalizing gambling, you'll just see it sooner. So I'll say April. I think Ohio State will be about 10.
Okay.
I mean, part of me says like, look what Oregon just did there this year. The other part of me says Ohio State was a really good football team this year and just hired one of the best defense coordinators in the country. And they have a Heisman finalist quarterback entering his second year as a starter. And all those receivers are losing. Well, guess what? We all watch the Rose Bowl. That position
is okay.
Going anywhere. I think it's going to be an incredibly tall ask of Notre Dame to go in there and win. But you know what? It's going to be really fun to see them try and to prepare for that game and watch that game. Like that's, and it's on campus. Like Georgia plays Oregon in week one as well. And that's, and I mean, Georgia's a better team, but they're playing their former defense coordinator in his first game, Dan Lanning. But it's in Atlanta, which, you know, is a Georgia home game, but it's just not the same as going to the horseshoe. And I think that's really, really cool that they're like, we're having a cool on-campus game like that. Even Georgia Clemson this year, awesome game, but it was in Charlotte.
Yeah, there's just not a need for that. Like I it was awesome when Georgia came here and then when Notre Dame went to Georgia, when Texas came here and then Notre Dame went to Texas, like that just felt huge. And you felt like you were getting something unique, like Ohio State for how much they've played in Fiesta Bowls. You know, this series goes back like 20 years, 25 years, you know, mid 90s, the tail end of the Lou Holtz era.
Luke Fickle.
Yeah. I mean, that is going to be really cool to experience that. I'm assuming we will be doing a live Shamrock before and after.
Like the live ones we did a couple weeks ago, like in person one.
No, I mean you and me will be together in Columbus with our colleague Bill Landis, who covers Ohio State.
Let's do it.
We can do it at Land Grant Brewing, but it's just I'm already looking forward to that environment, like the Friday night being in Columbus for a Saturday night game, and just sort of like what the buzz is going to be like that. You know, aside from the narrative of Marcus Freeman going back there, and there's a lot to that, but it's just going to be a cool college football environment. I'm fascinated to sort of see how Notre Dame spends the next 7 months getting ready for it, whether that be staff or personnel or practice, whatever. There's a lot of ground to cover, but man, that's going to be a fun Saturday night in Columbus.
It will. You think it's going to be a night game, huh?
Yeah, I'm sort of banking on that. I don't think
Fox might make Fox that
big noon.
Ooh, Fox has a right of first refusal. They're taking that. Then
as they should
put the other one at night. I don't know whatever time of the day it is. I can't wait for it. Hopefully it's noon because it means it's closer to happening than at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
But on that note, I don't know if we'll have any emergency pods coming up, but we've said that before and have been wrong. There's still staff hires to make, still portal additions probably to be made. And just a lot of stuff still to happen. Well, it's a long offseason, but there's a lot of interesting stuff happening with Notre Dame football this year. Stuff that I've never covered Notre Dame football. I've never covered the Notre Dame football coaching search. You've covered like four or five of them, but all those
but
were
it had
like
been
a very
more than
small...
a decade. Like, yeah. I didn't have kids the last time I covered a Notre Dame coaching search. Like, it was a surreal experience to go through that. I guess this was sort of what people in SEC do all the time, but yeah, it's an entirely batch of new stories. It's going to be a fun off season, new coaches, new energy, new recruiting vibes, like all of that stuff is going to be fun. I think it'll be fun for fans to consume, but it's also enjoyable for people like you and me to sort of report it out and tell those stories.
Oh, it's fun. Like they actually don't hate talking to us right now. They're well, usually the new coach is undefeated. This one, unfortunately, isn't, but he's still going into 2022 with a clean slate. And even though the initial honeymoon is over, the first full off season is always a fun time for new beginnings for coaches and new places. So we're both excited to tackle that this offseason.
No doubt. Well, the Shamrock will be with you all off season. I think we'll probably do every other week, ramp it up during spring ball once things are kind of heat up a little bit. But yeah, and then we'll be here for your emergency podcast needs. If there's a new defensive coordinator tomorrow, we'll probably do a podcast immediately after. There will be a lot to come on Notre Dame staff, and the Shamrock will be here to entertain you for it, as well as the Athletic will be here to cover it and catch up on all of it that way. So until our next podcast, whenever that may be, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.